Hey everybody, this is Phil Town.
And this is Danielle Town.
And we are here for the Invested Podcast, and Danielle has COVID, so we're again having a Q&A session today as we continue to try to figure out what's the best way to invest. What's the best? We know the best way to invest, but how do we do it? How do we invest like Warren Buffett? How do we copy the best investors in the world? And so we got some questions today. And Danielle, what do we got?
We do. Okay, so this one is from Erin. Here we go.
Hi, this is Erin. I'm a Rule 1 student, and I've been going back and listening to past podcasts by subject. I've noticed that Phil's opinion of IBM and its CEO has changed over time. For example, in earlier podcasts, he gave it as an example of a company that has a big moat. And in podcast number 21, Phil mentioned that IBM's return on equity was around 35% per year. But lately, it seems he's been critical of IBM's CEO, Ginni Rometty. I think this would make an interesting case study, and I wonder if you guys could talk about the history of this change in opinion on the podcast. Thanks very much. I enjoy the podcast.
Excellent question, Erin. Oh, and I would like to say that I have not run these questions by my dad in advance. I'm making you guys do the work and him do the work while I do this recovery process. So
I wish you'd run that one by me so I could say, no, don't play that. That's
no,
it's going
you
back.
Wouldn't. One thing I love about you is you are willing to take questions or just say you refuse to answer it, which is totally allowed.
I'm honor bound to answer that very, very good question and the insight that comes with it, which is...
But she's right. Hmm. She's right.
Yeah.
The insight. Right. Go ahead.
Well, the insight is that we have put down where we really were at years ago, and we've been doing this for 5 years, and at that point in time, one of the early podcasts, I was a fan of IBM and had bought IBM and Apple into my portfolio pretty aggressively on both of them, as had Warren Buffett. And I will admit, Buffett going into these things definitely influenced my decision. But I also have been in that industry before in the past and had worked closely with Steve Jobs at Next, and felt pretty comfortable. In fact, was a major investor in a software company that was using databases. And so I felt comfortable that I could understand the business fairly well. And I did a lot of work on it. And at the time, you know, they were coming into a new CEO, Ginni Rometty, and who had 4 or 5 years with IBM at that point. And she was trying very hard to change the direction of the company. And I will say that she did not succeed. And sometimes that's just the way it goes. You're trying to turn a gigantic aircraft carrier and you've got, you know, thousands and thousands of employees and you're trying to figure out where's the market going to be in the future. And Jenny's not a technology person. IBM's never been run by a technology person until just recently when they got a new CEO. And who does come from technology. So they've always had a salesperson running things, and that backfired on them this time. They needed somebody that understood the cloud and what was going on there. And just as an aside, I will say that one of the reasons I decided to get out of IBM is that I'm listening to Ginni Rometty talk about what the company's trying to do, and I actually recorded her. She was on a YouTube video, so I recorded it and sent it off to rev.com for transcription because I could not understand what she was saying as the CEO of this company. It sounded to me like she wasn't making any sense. And so I just thought, well, I'm misunderstanding it. So I got a transcript of it. And sure enough, it was one incoherent sentence after another.
That's a really cool method. I'm super intrigued to know about that. Good idea.
Yeah, I just needed to see it.
Yeah,
slowly.
No, I'm the same way. I learn visually, not through listening. And sometimes I'm like, I don't know if I'm just misunderstanding this or if the person's
right.
Actually not making sense. So that's a really excellent shout out.
Well, she was not making sense. And that was my first big red flag that, wow, maybe the CEO doesn't understand what she's trying to do here, in which case she's going to fail. And so that was a big deal. And then we basically were using options to try to offset some of the drops in the stock and buying in on put options and selling it on call options and generating cash flow as the company was warbling around in a range between 120 and 180 per share. And we're kind of enjoying that. It was fun because I was still sort of, I'm still interested in this company. And then it started to become clear that they were not making the transition over to the cloud. And Amazon did. And then Microsoft did. And Microsoft got themselves a CEO, very super great CEO, deep in technology. And they figured out how to move to the cloud. And they just kicked IBM's rear end. Now, a couple of things that you said this in this question are really cool. And that is that I mentioned back then that IBM had this big return on equity, which it did. And it had this big moat, which it still does, which is amazing about IBM. And it's an indication of how hard it is to break a really great moat, even when the company is seemingly doing everything wrong. IBM's moat is called a switching moat. It obviously has a brand moat, right? But I'm not sure that the brand has not been sullied up pretty badly over the last 10 years. But the switching moat is a huge moat. And it is a moat that gets created by IBM putting its technology and its hardware into these very large companies and into government offices and then becoming legacy. All of the things that get built on that hardware and software become legacy programs that are unique to that company. For example, if you have IBM in your court system and you've written all of these programs to help you figure out what the court dockets look like, you can't just switch to Amazon AWS. You can't just go over to Azure at Microsoft. You can't do it because you would have all these legacy programs that have to be rewritten into this new language. And the government is just like, no, we're not going to pay for that. It's still working. You know, keep it. So even though it's not the best, even though it's not even close to the best solutions, IBM gets to stay in there. And they're still in about 9 out of 10 of the biggest banks in the world. They're in 90% of the big healthcare companies. They're still in the back offices of major governments around the world. And that legacy switch moat has kept them alive. It is an absolute cash cow. It just keeps generating billions and billions of dollars, which they have then squandered by buying back their stock and ending up giving it back to the investors as their stock prices go down. It's been really a comedy of errors. Their shares went from, in 2011, they had about 1.2 million shares outstanding, 1.2 billion shares outstanding, and they're down to 890 million shares outstanding. And
that's huge.
That drop of 400 million shares has been paid for out of equity, and it's just been burned up. They might as well have taken... I mean, 400 million shares at 100 million is more than that, right? But 100 million times 400 million shares, $100 a share times 400 million, what does that give you? It's like 400 million and then two more zeros. $40 billion? $40 billion. They have pissed away. They might as well have taken $40 billion out onto the onto their parking lot, put it in a pile, and set it on fire.
Well,
that money's
hopefully
gone.
Hopefully their stock price went up commensurately.
No, it went down.
Oh.
Yeah, it went down. And so it's just gone. It's gone money. So
wow.
Now you own, you know, a bigger piece of a smaller business. And it's just, good Lord. And meanwhile, the revenues have gone from about 107 billion down to 77 billion. And they're holding on by their teeth with this legacy back office switch moat, but their time is running out and they finally realized they got to do something. So the board asked Jenny Rinometti to leave. And of course they didn't ask her to leave. She retired and they brought in their new CEO, and their new CEO is a technology guy. He's coming out of the technology section of the business, and they've got, maybe they've got something they can pull pull together. But now, of course, the competition is much more entrenched and much more difficult to compete with. And who knows, right, about whether they'll succeed or not.
So when you look back,
they could run out of moat.
When you look back at your decision making, well, how do you think about that? Do you see it as you made an error, or do you see it as these were unforeseen difficulties, or unable to foresee these difficulties?
Right. Well, the first thing is that there's no error in buying into a company that has a huge moat. That's right. If you can get it at the right price, that's where you always are looking for an opportunity. So the moat side of this was correct. The management side was an error. To a certain degree, you want a business that's simple enough that an idiot can run it, because someday an idiot will. This isn't to say Jenny Rometty is an idiot, but she is not a technology person. So in that sense, she just is in the wrong job. And you can see how powerful a moat is. You know, I mean, she basically got nothing done in 10 years while the rest of the industry was outperforming them and becoming harder to compete with. And yet IBM is still profitable and still going forward and still a viable company. That's how powerful that moat is. So the moat part was right. The management decision was essentially, do I have a manager here that I really trust and admire? And the answer should have been no. That should have been the answer there. And so I created a story based on my understanding of IBM, what they were going to achieve. And I thought they would make the transition, because they've made the transition every other time in their 100-year history. So I thought, okay, they'll make this transition as well. They've got more patents than any other company in the world every year. They've got fabulous technology people. But the management was critical. And so my story was, I can understand this business. They've got a big moat. They've got, good management, and they're on sale. And I was wrong about the management team. And when I realized I was wrong about the management team, then the story had changed. Then it's time to exit.
And but I think Warren Buffett thought that too. Were they really on sale?
At the time,
yeah.
Because
that sale price then would be based on your prediction that they're going to enter into cloud successfully. And
right.
The stock price would go up. So that was how you sort of, if that didn't happen, then they would no longer have been on sale, right?
Yeah. And so this is the reason why we buy companies with a big margin of safety, is because if we're wrong about it or the story changes, then we are able to still get out without a loss. And in fact, I actually got out with a bit of a profit on IBM.
Oh, good job.
Well, it's the power of buying things on sale. It really is. And so even though I bought it, I think I bought it around the one, probably overall my basis was ballpark 130 to 140, which was the lower end of its price ranges for several years. It just never came out of that. And by the time I realized why it wasn't coming out of that and decided to exit, I could still exit. And in fact, it went up to about 180 and I got out on some good news that something was happening that was good.
Well, you were in good company, because Buffett also bought into IBM.
He did.
I don't know if it was around the same time, but it was close.
I think I was in a little earlier. And although I can't say for sure, I'm certainly influenced by Buffett. And Buffett getting out was a big moment. I thought, yeah. Okay.
That's one of those ones that, I wasn't following at the time, but like looking back, knowing about that, that's one of the actions that he's taken that has stuck in my mind as a lesson from Buffett. That and the airline sale that he took this year. When you make a mistake, get out fast. Don't wait around. Acknowledge it. Don't have your ego involved. Just fully be like, oh, okay, got that one wrong. Get out. Don't wait around to like try to eke out some sort of magical situation. And that's been a huge lesson that I've learned from him.
Yep. And that was really a good one too. We obviously were influenced by Buffett when he started buying into the airlines and had, taken a pretty substantial position. When I say substantial position, you guys, what I mean is I'm in a range of 5 to 10% of the portfolio, and a really big position might go as high as 20%. Substantial position is like serious money on the line. And when we saw this whole thing happening with Southwest Airlines and got out, and got out clean. Because again, we bought with a margin of safety. It went up and then it came boiling down with this whole COVID thing started up. And we thought, this is just not going to be good for the airlines. And so we got out. And it was gratifying to get notified that Buffett got out that quarter as well. And he didn't have to report it till the 13F filings, but he decided to report it early just because mm-hmm. so many people look at what he's doing. Mm-hmm. So he was basically getting out at the same time that I was. And that's kind of gratifying just to see, okay, well, in 40 years of doing this, following the master, I'm at least getting some of the way he thinks into my head. And following that same basic set of principles leads you inevitably to the same basic actions at the same basic time. And so the principle here is when the story changes, obviously it could change in a good way, you might want to add more, but if it changes in a bad way to becoming something you wouldn't have bought, then you get out. It's just exit right now. Take the loss if there is one, but you just get out and you don't let the story slide along, right? It's a drift. You don't want this drift to happen to your investments where you're in it for a certain set of reasons, following these four basic Charlie Munger steps. When one of them changes dramatically, then you'd really have to change your position dramatically, and you need to do it right now. What you don't want to do is start finding excuses for why it's okay to stay in. That always turns out badly in my experience.
What was the dramatic change in IBM that made you decide, okay, this is time for a change, time for a decision here?
Well, it didn't happen all at once, but it was pretty dramatic when I finally realized what was going on. What really triggered it for me was Jenny Rometty not making sense about what the company
was doing.
So
that really was like
do.
A moment for you of like,
that
oh.
was a big moment.
Oh, interesting.
Because up to that point, I was like, what is the deal? They keep saying they're going to get better and better at this part of their new business, and they're not getting better and better. And other yeah. companies are getting better and better. And IBM isn't really telling us the hard truth. Jenny was not coming out and saying our competitors are doing better than we are. It was all salesmanship.
Oh,
I started
hate
to
that.
Lose faith in that.
Yeah.
And so that's the story change. I went from management good to management bad. End of story, out of here.
But had the numbers changed?
They were sliding along.
So
they
it
just
was just
getting where
you
I was
were expecting
them to go.
A rise in everything and success, yeah. and you yeah. weren't seeing that success.
No.
Got it.
And the price was sliding going sideways with the numbers because it was such a cash cow. I mean, the reason they could buy so much stock back and pay $40 billion is because they were making like $15 billion a year cash flow. And, you know, it's hard for me not to buy a $15 billion a year company when you can buy it for, you know, effectively a 10 cap. And it's like, yeah, I want to own this. And it's got a huge moat. And I just had faith that they would find their way through this technology change. And they just haven't so far. And now it's up to Arvind Krishna. He's the new CEO.
Yeah.
He comes from technology. I don't know for sure that he's one of these incredible India Institute of Technology grads, but I wouldn't be surprised if he is. And he's one of these brilliant, brilliant people. I don't know if you knew this, but India did an amazing thing. You and I both love India, and they did an amazing thing. The government of India created boarding schools for kids and has thousands and thousands, maybe millions, I don't know, but certainly thousands of kids that are selected to go to these boarding schools just based on some testing of, you know, do you have it in you at age 5 or 6, whatever they can test with, to be able to benefit from this school. And they take these kids in, and then the very cream of the crop ends up going to India Institute of Technology. And by the way, Manish Pabrai, who's one of my favorite investors, and we've talked about him here before, and you and I know him, Manish has a charity called Dakshana, which he donates aggressively to himself and then raises money for it. And Guy Spear has put money into Dakshana, and I will at some point here in the future. I think it's a fabulous thing. And what he does is he provides seed capital for these kids who are like in high school level. He goes in and picks like thousands of them to pave their way forward, to help them get better and better training, the ones he thinks have a shot at the IIT. And his track record is enormous. 82% of the kids he picked over the last couple of years have made it into the Indian Institute of Technology.
Wow.
It's like, holy smokes, man. He's got a guy running it who's a former colonel in the Indian Army who has just got a way of figuring out which kids have the best shot. And one of the things he does is he gives them, Monash went over there and went into the classroom and put a question on the board. And he said, here, see if you guys can solve this problem. And the problem was, if a prime number is greater than or equal to 5, what is that prime number if it's divisible by 24 and it's n minus 1? It's the prime number minus, it's n minus 1. What's n? I don't know. I might not have stated it right. But so don't try to solve it. But he writes in this interview he gave to another guy, what there was a girl who said, well, I sort of think I have the answer. And she comes up and shows it to him. And he goes, well, that's one of the more brilliant answers I've seen. And she got fast-tracked and, in fact, is one of the, I think, the top 200 students that was in her class at IIT. So he's got ways of figuring out what kids have the horsepower intellectually to really become giants. And that's what India's been promoting. And my guess, I'm going to look at a Wikipedia page here for Arvind.
Yeah, I don't know if the CEO of IBM went there or not, but he's obviously extremely capable. He's risen up through the company. He's been leading there. Oh, okay, good.
Yes, he did.
Bachelor's, I don't know why that's good. How nice for him.
India Institute of Technology. Yeah, and then these kids come out of India Institute of Technology and they come to places like Cornell, University of Illinois, Urbana, Champaign for
what are you
a
reading
PhD,
from?
Wikipedia page.
Oh, so that's all nice. Resumes are great.
Well, I'm
resumes
just pointing out, you got
don't
a new
make
CEO
companies
in here.
Do well.
No,
so
you do have a new CEO though, and he's coming from a similar background to other CEOs in the technology space who have come out of the Indian Institute of Technology. They're super smart people, and I mean, he might be worth betting on. I'm not saying I'm going back into IBM now that he's become the CEO. But IBM still has that big moat. They face more competition now than they used to before. But boy, I really like it that IBM, for the first time in its history, has got an actual technology guy at the top of this thing.
Yeah, I do too. And I think the fact that he knows the company really well is very, like, he knows the nuts and bolts of how that company runs its technology. And to me, that's a huge advantage over the last situation.
Yep.
So I don't know
if he can
do it.
I'm watching IBM a little again.
Yeah, but this is, it kind of follows on our conversation about the marijuana companies from last time, which is, even if you don't invest, like maybe you're somebody who's looking, or I don't know, to take your situation, like you knew a lot about IBM, you actually made a little money, so that's great, but it didn't work out the way you thought it was going to. But all of that time is not wasted, because now here you are looking at the new CEO, and you can use all of that experience and perspective and well-ingrained knowledge over years to make a more informed decision than, for example, somebody like me, which, I mean, IBM is completely new to me, but I find it very interesting.
I tell you, it's like most things, to be super brilliant, it helps to be young, right? You get your super brilliant physicists and the super brilliant chemists and your super brilliant business guys, you know, the Steve Jobs of the world, and they come out and set the world on fire with a whole different view of what's going on. They're young. They got a different paradigm. Investing, it helps to be old. It's great. It's like the one real great enterprise where being old and out of shape is some sort of an advantage.
I just like to sit in front of my computer.
Yeah,
and read the annual report.
Get a little out of shape, you know. But man, your knowledge is stacking on top of knowledge on top of knowledge on top of knowledge, and it accumulates in a wonderful way to where older investors are fantastic investors. Warren Buffett is in his prime. Charlie Munger's in his prime at 96, you know? These guys are great investors. They don't make many mistakes. And I think Monash would say that same thing. Guy Spier would probably say the same thing. If we continue reading, we continue studying, we continue sticking to the basics that we're basically copying from all the way back at Ben Graham, from, you know, the 1920s, really, with Ben, you're going to get better. You're going to get better and better and better and better. And that is a wonderful thing, you guys. So,
yeah,
you know, keep working at it. And there's never a limit to your ability to learn. And if you're willing to start and you're willing to start doing the things that we're teaching here, even if you're just paper trading, you're going to get better and you're going to get good at it. And just from this, you guys, so many of you who have been listening to the podcast for so long now, just if you're just doing the things you've learned on the podcast, I can promise you, you're in the top 1% of investors in the world.
Just.
All right, do the things on the podcast.
I don't know what world you're living out. In. Yeah,
there's a lot there.
Yeah, there's a lot there. But Aaron, thank you very much for your question. And Dad, thank you very much for putting out your opinions about IBM for 5 years, because it's super interesting to see a progression. And many investors won't talk about their holdings specifically because of this. Somebody will be like, 4 years ago, you liked this company and it sucks. And then they have to be like, oh, yeah, okay. And it's like not a fun experience, right? But I think it's really nice. Many investors will talk about like a few, one or two or three, and follow it over time. And it's nice to hear that, because there really is a wax and a wane to some, and of course it has to be a lasting one, but to some companies. All right.
I think it's time for my COVID girl to go take a rest.
It is indeed.
So honey, thanks for doing this again.
Yeah.
I love that you can, you know, kind of sit up and do this for a little while. And I want you to go drink a lot of water and get a lot of rest and eat all the food that Nuno slides under the door, because he's sending me pictures of them from the plates. And they're lovely. I don't know how he does it. He's like a food photographer.
He is. It's really so doing funny. Good. He takes pictures of all the food he makes for me. It's so weird.
He's such a sweetheart. I love your husband so much.
I think he's just so proud of himself, but he's gotten really good at cooking lately because I am not allowed in the kitchen. So it's, you know, needs
he's
must.
A man. He's a man. You got a great partner there, girl. All right. Time to,
thanks,
time to
everybody.
Go.
Bye.
Time to go play. See ya. Hi, guys. Thanks for listening to Invested. If you enjoyed this episode and you want more information or to listen to additional episodes, visit our website at investedpodcast.com and sign up for my virtual workshop right there. Spots are definitely limited for this event. I'm not kidding. They really are. They sell out very quickly. So everything discussed on this podcast, by the way, is either my opinion or it's Danielle's opinion. And it's really important, it's not to be taken as investing advice, because I am not your financial advisor, nor have I considered your personal situation as your fiduciary. So remember that. You're on your own here. This podcast is for your entertainment and education only, and I really hope you enjoyed it.